The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we'll be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Today on Armchair Traveler, we're going to learn how Mother Nature has again altered a popular tourist site. Canaveral National Seashore, Playa Linda Beach, smashed by Hurricane Nicole, are not going to be the same, as the headline for Kevin Spears' article. It first appeared in the Orlando Sentinel and was published in the January 1, 2023 online edition of the News and Observer. As the subhead states, Canaveral National Seashore in Florida was badly damaged by Hurricane Nicole in November. Boardwalks built with stainless steel nails and premium lumber were wrenched apart. Now to the main article. What makes Canaveral National Seashore so revered in Florida is that visitors can commune with the wildest nature, some 24 miles of Atlantic surf rolling onto beaches never reconstructed, far from T-shirt shops and conjuring a sense of before European conquest. A surprise and decisive beating by Hurricane Nicole in November has altered how visitors, 2.2 million last year, will experience Canaveral's nature and has set the stage for more disruption to the longest wilderness coast along Florida's Atlantic coast. Today, nearly half a century into its existence, the National Seashore is at an existential crossroads. The Category 1 Nicole did something more damaging than fling debris of costly boardwalks and bury parking lots under uncalculated tons of sand. Nicole carved up essential dunes along half of the seashore, removing an incredible amount of sand that had walled off the surf zone and beach from the skinny-backed blacktop and string of parking lots on the other side. Without dunes and their defensive shields of sea grapes and palmettos, scenery has startlingly changed, encompassing at a glance the adjoining waters to the Atlantic to the east and the Indian River to the west. Canaveral's southern and most popular stretch of seashore, Playa Linda Beach, remains closed for health, safety, and access reasons. Parts are littered with splintered boards spiked with stainless steel nails. Its vault-style bathrooms are clogged with sand, and the access road and parking lots are navigable in areas only with a well-driven four-wheel drive. While Nicole drew national headlines for savaging private homes and properties along Volusia County coast to the north, keepers of the public seashores quietly have been trying to formulate how to pursue questions of when, where, under what conditions, and the toughest, if visitors won't be allowed to venture back to at least some portions of Playa Linda. I've been here 28 years and seen a lot of storms, said Laura Henning, spokesperson and among a staff of 45 at Canaveral's National Seashore. Now, every time I come here, I am in shock. I think everybody is feeling that way, she added. The Park Service's mission combines environmental protection and visitor enjoyment. There is little inclination for not fully reopening Canaveral's Playa Linda, Henning said, but neither is there much inclination for trying to stop nature from being nature. It's just not going to be the same as it was, Henning said. It can't be. The southern half of Canaveral National Seashore, Playa Linda Beach, has 14 parking lots strung out along 6 miles of a two-lane blacktop. The lots combined offer 1,200 spaces. Playa Linda in Brevard County was meant to welcome more visitation than the northern end of Canaveral National Seashore, Apollo Beach in Volusia County, which has 250 parking spaces along 6 miles of access road. That's because when the nation's space agency acquired lands for what is now Kennedy Space Center, Titusville was robbed of its beach, what is now Playa Linda. The National Park Service, in effect, provides the city with its historic beach. The first 5 lots and their extensive boardwalks that meet ADA requirements escaped major punishment from Nicole. The dunes along those 5 beach accesses are the seashore's tallest and most robust. Henning said the seashore staff has concentrated on reopening the first 5 lots to the public, slated for early January. The fate of the next 8 parking and access areas is an open question. The dunes along that stretch of road were not as robust, and the barrier island that Canaveral National Seashore occupies narrows there. It's there where Nicole left a moonscape along the access road and parking areas. It's where so much dune sand vanished, replaced by smooth beach lapped by waves. And it's where park staff suspect that with further storms, Canaveral National Seashore may be cut in half, breached by an inlet of Atlantic waters to the inshore Indian River Lagoon. In an area of potential for such an outlet, about a half mile beyond the last parking lot, Christian Neifel, Canaveral's chief of resource management, found herself trying to make sense of the new landscape. "It doesn't look like our park," Neifel said. "It reminds me of somewhere in the Bahamas or somewhere over the Panhandle or a flat moonscape, basically. It looks very different, leveled, flat." There is another seashore about halfway along the six-mile road, also showing vulnerability to high tides of storms, cutting an inlet from the ocean to the Indian River. "We've always known this is coming," Neifel said. "It's just happened sooner than we all thought. We've always said, what would we do? Would we just let it go back to nature? Would we build a bridge? Would we reroute the road?" Neifel said that while options are being assembled, some of it might not be our choice, meaning that nature may dictate critical steps ahead. The inputs for making choices are interacting and daunting. Hurricane Nicole's scraping away of the dunes along half of the seashore park significantly degraded two-thirds of the beach space where 14,000 sea turtles' nests were documented in 2022. Canaveral dunes are essential habitat for the federally endangered southeastern beach mouse. A host of protected marine birds spend some or all of their lives there. "We also know the park is highly loved by the community," Neifel said. "Charting a future for the park means determining what to rebuild or not to rebuild, whether Sea Rise already has decided that parts of the seashore will be cut off by inlets, and whether the seashore is vulnerable to hurricanes strengthened by a warming climate." Neifel said the park has enlisted U.S. Geological Survey, National Park Service geologists, and is reaching out to others. The National Park Service generally would forbid measures such as installing seawalls or dredging sand to renourish beaches and rebuild dunes. It's doing what a barrier island's supposed to do, Neifel said, of Canaveral's reconfiguration by Hurricane Nicole. In that sense, infrastructure such as boardwalks and roadway was damaged while dunes of the Canaveral's barrier island were relocated and repurposed, what dunes do on a barrier island. "It just happens to be a barrier island used by a lot of visitors and used by a lot of sea turtles," Neifel said. Joe Donahue, a retired geology professor at the University of Central Florida, said the greater barrier island that includes Canaveral National Seashore has been hit in its current state more or less for, has rather been in its current state more or less for 6,000 years. "There's evidence that several storm-induced inlets have existed," Donahue said. "Major storm levels the dunes and in some places creates new inlets. The inlets persist for some period of years or decades and then fill in. Dunes rebuild and a quasi-equilibrium is reached again," he noted. "Storm effects of battered dunes and new inlets are not new," he said. "It's just that nature operates on one time scale and humans on another. The Canaveral stretch of the coastline is geologically healthy and should rebuild over time," Donahue said. "Of course, sea level rise may overcome the natural processes." He said of an expected acceleration of sea rise for centuries because of global warming. Henning and Neifel said one major response tentatively favored by park staff is doing away with the most vulnerable boardwalks that had provided access over dunes. In their places, marked paths would lead to beaches and could be equipped with removable plastic mats for stability. Charles Lee of Audubon, Florida, long has been mindful of suspicions that NASA, the owner of the lands designated as the Canaveral National Seashore and Merritt Island National Wildlife Refuge, wants to expand launch facilities into two conservation areas. The first parking lot of Playa Linda Beach is less than 2 miles from the nearest Kennedy Space Center launch pad. The pummeling by hurricanes of Canaveral's Playa Linda Beach, according to the suspicions, would be an excuse for NASA's expansions. But with storm damage and rising sea levels and indications that a new inlet will be cut through Canaveral National Seashore, there may be a more innovative way to accommodate visitors than the long-standing use of private cars and parking areas, Lee said. A bicycle trail combined with a tram to shuttle visitors on a narrower path may be more appropriate, Lee says. Florida's Park Service and National Seashores elsewhere have adopted that approach. It works quite well, he added. Clay Henderson, a lawyer specializing in environmental conservation and longtime advocate for Canaveral National Seashore, said he too has monitored NASA's desires to push Kennedy Space Center operations or impacts into Canaveral National Seashore. You know there will be behind-the-scenes efforts not to rebuild and further limit public access, Henderson said. We hope that isn't the case. Even without a NASA shadow on Canaveral's future, the Park Service faces a difficult task in balancing public recreation and resource protection. This is a tough one, Henderson said. It's hard to believe those big dune and walkovers are gone. We're not focused on damaged boardwalks, loss of turtle nesting beach, and challenges ahead for park management. Neifel said she has a renewed way of looking at Canaveral National Seashore in the aftermath of Hurricane Nicole. It's quite beautiful, she said. That wilderness of it is just gorgeous. Well, we'll no doubt have some further reports on what's going to happen down there in future reports. You know, somewhere in the Atlantic is the dateline for our next story. Writer Richard Trebo of the Orlando Sentinel explains in the subhead, Royal Caribbean's Wonder of the Seas began sailing from Port Canaveral, Florida, for year-round service in November. It's the current record holder for the world's largest cruise ship. Trebo's article was published in the January 1st, 2023 online edition of the News and Observer. Port Canaveral has welcomed most of Royal Caribbean's Oasis-class ships, each of which has held the title of the world's largest cruise ship, but with Wonder of the Seas arrival, it marks the first time the Orlando market has gotten hold of one in its first years of service. Wonder of the Seas debuted out of Port Everglades in the spring, but began year-round service from Port Canaveral in November. The ship comes in at 1,188 feet long, 217 feet wide, with 18 decks and 2,867 staterooms. Its gross tonnage is 236,857, with a 7,084 guest maximum capacity, the highest among all Oasis-class ships. The line held its official naming ceremony on December 10th, ahead of which it took news media members on a two-night preview cruise. Just like its sister ships, Wonder of the Seas brings the familiar neighborhood concepts that helps travelers avoid feeling like they're crammed on a ship with thousands of fellow cruisers. The neighborhoods ebb and flow like neighborhoods in any community, said Royal Caribbean President and CEO Michael Bailey. When we were designing the ship, we give it a lot of thought to the natural cadence and the movement of the people during the day. A lot of the features found on board are familiar to the class, including the signature Central Park open space carved out in the middle of the ship, the boardwalk at the aft with its own carousel, and the top deck three water slide attraction, the Perfect Storm. It's also once again home to the twin dry slides called the Ultimate Abyss, which allows thrill-seekers to climb into its signature angler fish entryway and twist their way down 10 decks below in 10 seconds, or just seconds, I should say. The ship, though, has other features that set it apart. At the top of the list is bacon. Okay, it's southern restaurant concept called the Mason Jar. Within the bacon, it makes several notable cameos, such as garnish, along with a cherry and the drink called the Far From Manhattan. The restaurant, though, is more than just spirits. It's comfy, homey chairs, a live band with a smiling portrait of Dolly Parton overlooking the stage, and a geographic hopscotch across southern states on the menu. It's certainly not the only specialty dining on board, with the return of the two-deck molecular gastronomy cuisine offering Wonderland, plus main stays, 150 Central Park, Chops Grill, Giovanni's Italian Kitchen and Wine Bar, Hooked Seafood, Izumi Sushi, and Teppanyaki. Players Sports Bar and Arcade and Johnny Rockets with costs ranging from $10 to $70 per person among those options. There's plenty of complimentary dining on board, as well as including the Windjammer Buffet, Park Cafe in Central Park with the line's roast beef, Kumawek sandwich, El Loco Fresh with its seriously tasty hot sauces, Boardwalk Doghouse, and Sorrento's Pizza and others. Those on liquid diets will find plenty of options, including the robotic bartender staff Bionic Bar, traditional Schooner Bar, Cantina Fresca, Boleros, Cask and Clipper, Rising Tide Bar, Wipeout Bar, that's near the Flow Rider, Trellis Bar in Central Park, Solarium Bar, and the Lime and Coconut concept that's been rolled out across much of Royal Fleet since its debuting aboard Navigator of the Seas in 2019. And don't worry, there's also a Starbucks. Most of the bars and restaurants are peppered across the 8 neighborhoods, so there are gastronomic options around every corner, although sometimes it takes a long walk to reach that corner. So you'll be hungry, naturally, right? With the ship's enormity, the cruise line also decided to pull most of its suites into one neighborhood, making it the only Oasis-class ship with 8. The other Oasis-class ships have 7, with Central Park, Boardwalk, Pool and Sports Zone, Entertainment Place, Royal Promenade, Vitality Spa and Fitness Center, and Youth Zone. Other changes on Wonder include offering only one Flow Rider surf simulator while opening up space for an underwater-themed outdoor play area for families called Wonder Playscape with mini-golf, slides, climbing walls, and an interactive touch mural. The whole space lights up with neon at night with a vivid orange octopus lording over it. Another change is the addition of the New View Bar that took the place of one of the cantilevered hot tubs found on other Oasis-class ships that allows for a nice vantage of the ocean. It's also the third ship after Symphony of the Seas and Spectrum of the Seas to feature the priciest suite available, the Ultimate Family Suite, complete with its own slide, Lego wall, digital game table, hot tub, and stairwell that plays music as you walk on the steps. Costs vary, but can quite often hit $25,000 or more for a one-week cruise. The ship size also comes to the forefront when sitting in the main dining room that spans 3 decks or choosing from the hundreds of tables across the buffet that's now the largest in the fleet. But the details in each space make cruisers feel more like they're moving among intimate spaces. At times, beholding the size of the ship is a treat, like people watching in a large city or enjoying the breeze created by the wind tunnel amid Central Park. But the details can be welcome distractions as well, from the Alice in Wonderland decorated elevator doors adjacent to Wonderland, to the red Mustang parked on the promenade, to white leather and red velvet couches inside the somewhat hidden comedy venue, the Attic. Just as on several other Royal Caribbean ships, the stage has been set for big shows in 3 media, traditional theater, an ice skating rink, and the massive Aqua Theater, each with a new show unique to Wonder of the Seas. The ship's Aqua Theater has a massive clamshell feature at the aft of the ship that helps stave off the elements of showtime with musical homages pulled from movie scores like Interstellar and The Matrix. The all-female driving, aerobatic, and tightrope walking performers embrace their show's name, Intense, with 55 high dives and even a patented whirling water and light display that looks similar to fireworks. It's a frenzy. It's meant to be chaos. It's an emotional experience for the cast that night. Every night, sometimes they're in tears, said Royal Caribbean's Vice President of Entertainment, Nick Weir. We thought we should max this one. Let's turn everything to 10. More dives than we've ever done, more volume, more motion, more everything. Everything is tuned to 10. While the ship may be big, the mini ice rink, Studio B, which is open for cruisers to try their frozen sea legs upon during part of the sailing, is home to a more technicolor treat with the skating show 365, The Seasons on Ice. It opens with the Beatles, Here Comes the Sun, and migrates through the potpourri of musical stylings while projection lighting coupled with seriously talented skating routines, replete with spins and flips similar to viewing a kaleidoscope. There's also a black light puppet show for kids on board, and the occasional surprise stowaway piano player who makes appearances randomly on the ship's elevators. For the main stage show in the Royal Theater, though, the line has created a sequel for the Effectors superhero offering that debuted on Odyssey of the Seas, this one titled The Effectors 2, Crash and Burn, because the superhero shows need sequels, Weir said. Even if Marvel movies aren't your cup of tea, 48 choreographed drones that play a central role to the storyline are appropriate to the ship's name, while the music is a combination of familiar popular tunes along with some catchy original songs. Technology ought to get top billing as well, with a memorable laser light sequence and an eye-tricking routine in which live actors trade spaces with digital versions in giant smartphones. This is all clever stuff for a cruise line, Weir said. Whew. Take you a while just to figure out where everything is that size, isn't it? Ooh, my goodness, what a trip that would be. Well, Port Canaveral is less than an hour's drive from Orlando, Florida, soon to be home of a new ride, the surf coaster at SeaWorld Orlando. And there's more as writer Brady McDonald of the Orange County, California Register reveals 2023 is filled with a new ride attractions. His article, The Nation's Best Ride and Attractions Coming to a Theme Park Near You, was published in January 1st, 2023, the online edition of the News and Observer. Let's see what he's going to tell us. Now, his dateline starts at Santa Ana, California. It's never too early to look ahead at what's on tap for next year, and 2023 is already shaping up as a good year for roller coaster enthusiasts, thrill ride junkies, and theme park fans. Consider our top 10 for 2023 to be an evolving and ever-changing list of the best rides and attractions coming to theme parks in the United States in the coming year. Early announcements suggest 2023 will once again be a good year for theme park enthusiasts. Many parks have already begun construction on this year's projects, while others have only announced plans or launched teaser campaigns. Here's what to watch for. First, the Super Nintendo World Theme Land, debuting February 17th at Universal Studios Hollywood, will feature the Mario Kart, Bowser's Challenge, augmented reality racing car ride, Toadstool Cafe Restaurant, and 1UP Factory Retail Shop. Second, the Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway Trackless Dark Ride, imported from Florida, will serve as the centerpiece of Disneyland's reimagined Mickey's Toontown. The new ride debuts January 27th, a few weeks before the March 8th opening of the refreshed land. And then the third item, the Tron Lightsicle Run, coming this spring to Disney's Magic Kingdom in Florida, will be a clone of the Shanghai Disneyland motorcycle-style coaster. Four, the Villain Con Minion Blast attraction, opening this summer at Universal Studios Florida, puts visitors on a conveyor belt-like motion-based pathway and arms them with an interactive blaster for some video game-style action. Five, the $25 million Big Bear Mountain Coaster from Netherlands-based ridemaker Vekoma debuts at Dollywood this spring. The 4,000-long multi-launch coaster will be the Tennessee theme park's longest. Number six, the former Wildcat wooden coaster at Pennsylvania's Hershey Park gets a Rocky Mountain Construction hybrid makeover for summer 2023. The 3,500-foot-long Wildcat's Revenge will feature zero-G stalls and rolls. Number seven, the Pipeline, the surf coaster coming to SeaWorld Orlando in the spring, is being billed as the next-generation stand-up coaster from Switzerland-based ridemaker Bollinger and Mabillard. The Arctic Rescue snowmobile-themed launcher, number 8, is coming to SeaWorld in San Diego in spring. It's going to take riders on a trek through the frigid tundra without ever leaving sunny Southern California. Number 9, the Dark Coaster, Escape from Storm Snowball Coaster, coming to the Busch Gardens, Williamsburg. This will take riders through the abandoned fortress of the Virginia theme park's former Curse of Dark Castle Dark Ride. And number 10, Primordial is billed as one-of-a-kind interactive coaster built into a massive man-made mountain at the family-owned Lagoon theme park in Utah. The in-house project in development for 7 years set to finally open in 2023. And then they have the 10 next best rides for the year. Number 11, Air Force One coaster by Rocky Mountain Construction, Fun Spot America in Atlanta, Georgia. 12, Spaghetti Bowl, dueling single rail coaster by Skyline Attractions. That's in Six Flags Fiesta, Texas. Then we have the Zambezi Zinger at number 13. This is the Zambezi Zinger 2 hybrid coaster by Great Coasters International World. That's going to be located at Worlds of Fun in Missouri. Number 14, the Aeronautica Landing Theme Land with six rides at Carowinds, of course, right outside Charlotte, North Carolina. And then number 15, the Catapult Falls Launched Flume Water Coaster at SeaWorld San Antonio, Texas. And then we have Montezuma at number 16. This is the Forbidden Fortress Flywheel Launched Coaster Makeover at Knott's Berry Farm in Buena Park, California. Number 17, the S&S Scream and Swing Ride called Serengeti Flyer, Busch Gardens, Tampa, Florida. Number 18, Journey of Water Mona-themed land at Epcot in Florida. And number 19, Adventureland Treehouse Makeover inspired by Swiss Family Robinson. This will be at Disneyland in Anaheim, California. And number 20, two Hot Wheels-themed coasters by Chance Rides, Mattel Adventure Park, located in Arizona. Any theme park preview like this would be impossible without the help of Screamscape, Roller Coaster Database, Blue Loop, WDW News Today, and Theme Park X, just to give proper credits to everyone who helped to write that article. Wow. Well, how about the new Strawberry Gap Trail in Girton, North Carolina? Something less tame, but in the wild nonetheless. This story was published in the December 2022 issue of the Fairview Town Crier, and it says, in our October issue, we told you about the opening of the Strawberry Gap in Girton. It was created from a partnership among the Clark, Hamilton, and Ager families, conserving North Carolina and the Southern Appalachian Highlands Conservancy. You can read the article in that issue for more background. The 3-mile one-way trail begins at a parking area off Highway 74A in Girton and ascends through a forest to the rocky viewpoint on Ferguson Peak. And from there, it continues to climb until it reaches Blue Ridge Pastures, where the open meadow offers dramatic views of the Hickory Nut Gorge as it plunges toward Lake Lure. Wow. The Strawberry Gap Trailhead is located in Girton on the south side of Highway 74A near its intersection with Little Pisgah Road. Driving east, you will see a fenced gravel parking lot on your right with space for 25 cars and a kiosk at the trailhead. As far as parking goes, please do not park outside the designated spaces. You will be towed at your own expense. If the parking area is full, consider hiking at one of the nearby trails such as Troubadour, Bear Swallow, Wildcat Rock, or Florence Nature Preserve. They all connect, by the way. And then we have some details. The Strawberry Gap Trail is strenuous, 3 miles long one way, and gains 1,200 feet in elevation. If you're hiking the trail as an out and back, which would be 6 miles, you will gain a total of 1,450 feet of elevation. After about 1.5 miles of hiking from the trailhead, you will reach a dramatic overlook at the top of Ferguson Peak. This rock outcrop offers sweeping views westward over the picturesque countryside toward Fairview and Asheville. In the distance, you can see as far as the Great Smoky Mountains and Platte Balsam Mountains. After 3 miles, you'll reach the grassy bald summit of Blue Ridge Pastures at 3,760 feet elevation. Here, you'll see the panoramic views looking down the center of Hickory Nut Gorge. And you can also see nearby Bear Wallow Mountain and Little Pisgah Mountain, also great places to go. And that, my friends, brings us to the end of today's journey on Armchair Traveler. We hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be tuning in next time as we enjoy more things to do, and whether it's in North Carolina or theme rides or what have you. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and I remind you the content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler, available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. The website again, ncreadingservice.org, and comments and questions may be directed to 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.